Welcome to Alabama Short Stories, when you're a little behind on your Alabama history. I'm your host, Sean Wright. My soon-to-be wife and I had picked the day and we were making plans for our wedding at Trinity United Methodist Church in Homewood. When choosing the time for the ceremony, we were informed that there might be a small problem. You see, another event was taking place in the church that day, and church officials thought it might be over before our wedding, but they weren't sure. It was the National Sacred Harp Convention, 3 days of all-day singing. When I hear the word sacred harp, my mind immediately goes to an angel with wings and a white robe sitting on a cloud, playing soft and soothing music on a golden harp. The music sung at the Sacred Harp Convention, happening the same day as my wedding, was nothing of this sort. Some call this style of music shape note or fa sol la. It's called shape note because of how the notes are visually written in the songbook. Now, if you can read music, you will see that the notes are written as you would typically find them on the staff, but the note heads have a unique feature. Depending on the shape, you will sing a sound. Now, the other name for sacred harp music is fa sol la, the first three notes and sounds on the scale. The fourth note is mi. Fa is written as a triangle, so as a circle, la as a square, and mi as a triangle. Now, when singers see the note, they know what sound to make. When the church secretary told us it was a sacred harp convention, I knew exactly what she was talking about. I'd sung sacred harp music once before. Around the time I got married, I was lucky enough to be part of the Birmingham Concert Chorale, a chorus that is now known as the Alabama Symphony Orchestra Chorus. We sang a wide range of songs, from those by American composers to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Verdi's Requiem, and to the 1812 Overture. In that choir, I got my first taste of sacred harp music. For our program, American Composers, we sang the song The Promised Land. In the first verse, we sang the sounds indicated by the shape notes, followed by the second verse, where we sang the words. To give you an idea of what sacred harp singing sounds like, here's a little bit of that song by the Birmingham Concert Chorale under the direction of Mark Ridings. Needless to say, sacred harp is fun to sing. Now, it doesn't quite fit in with Ave Maria and the wedding march, but there was no need to worry about our wedding. The convention had cleared out of the church and had moved to the City Stages Music Festival, where participants had a mid-afternoon spot on the Alabama Sampler stage. Now, when my concert chorale sang The Promised Land, we sang from risers in front of an audience in the Soaring Sanctuary at Briarwood Presbyterian Church. The singers who went to City Stages didn't stand on risers. Sacred harp music is performed much differently. Singers arrange themselves in a hollow square where they're facing each other, and there are four parts: treble, alto, tenor, and bass. Basses face the trebles, and altos face the tenors. A leader is in the middle, and the leader picks the song and calls it by page number. Now, there's no instrument, so the leader finds a good pitch, everyone quickly finds their part, and the song starts. Sacred harp singing is not part of a church service, but can be a profoundly spiritual moment for singers. It is done in special gatherings or singings arranged for the purpose. Singings can be local, regional, statewide, or national. Small singings are often held in homes with probably only a dozen singers. Now, the best way I heard this music explained is that sacred harp singers sing for one another and for God. Sacred harp music started in 18th century New England and can trace its roots to country parish music in 18th century England. The music migrated to the American South in the decades around 1830. It is believed that the music started as secular and had religious lyrics added later. There's a tradition of doing this. For instance, the Star Spangled Banner by Francis Scott Key got its tune from a popular English drinking song called to Anacreon in heaven. Sacred Heart music continued to change in the mid-19th century and reflected the sensibilities of the time. In the 20th century, songs were added, but they kept the style of earlier songs. Now let me confuse you even more. We call it Sacred Harp singing, but it's also the name of the songbook, a rectangular book with a binding on the short side, making it long. The first songbook was The Sacred Harp by B.F. White and E.J. King, published in 1844. It contained over 250 songs, and some say that in some parts of the South, the book was even more popular than the Bible. Now, King died shortly after the songbook was published, so White had to continue with updates. He helped guide three more updates and died in 1879 before the fourth update was published. Now, by the turn of the century, Sacred Harp music was old and antiquated to 20th century ears, and the songbook had not been updated in over a while. Gospel music and a seven-shape note system had become popular, and the piano and organ had returned to churches. It looked like the end was near for Sacred Harp. Or was it? Instead of bending to modern music styles, the old, archaic style of Sacred Harp would be presented as a virtue, a time-tested musical tradition that would be passed down from generation to generation. They would resist the use of musical instruments and continue to sing unaccompanied. B.F. White and his committee had kept Sacred Harp moving in one direction, but the community would soon split as teachers would revise the original Sacred Harp songbook, and some of the most influential teachers were from right here in Alabama. These teachers came from Sacred Harp singing schools. Schools were created to help teach young and old about the traditions and performance of the Sacred Harp. Teachers would be invited to communities to teach and lead students in Sacred Harp singing. They would be provided a fee, room and board, and stay an extended time. Now, the school would be an important community event and would last for days. W.M. Cooper from Dothan was one of those teachers, and he wanted to update the original Sacred Harp. He was not part of White's inner circle, so while retaining the old songs, he added more contemporary music, changed song titles, and transposed songs into new keys along with other changes. The Cooper Book is now the predominant book in the Florida Panhandle, the southern regions of Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Texas. North Alabama didn't take to the Cooper Book. In today's language, we would accuse it of being too liberal because it deviated too far from the original. Even B.F. White's son, the natural choice to continue publishing the songbook, was a non-traditionalist, and his update was poorly received. Committee head Joseph James published a revision in 1911. Original was added to the title Sacred Harp, so readers would know this was directly connected to the original 1844 version. The James edition satisfied most of the community's wishes, but it would take two brothers from North Alabama to get things back on track. Seaborn Denson, born 1854, and his brother Thomas Denson, born 1863, grew up in Arbacuchi in Claiborne County in East Alabama. They were born into a Sacred Harp singing family. Their father, Levi, was a farmer and Methodist minister, and their uncle had composed a Christmas anthem for the first Sacred Harp songbook that we now know as the White Songbook. By the late 19th century, the Denson brothers had been active in teaching Sacred Harp. When their father, Levi, passed away, the brothers moved to Winston County where they farmed and continued to teach Sacred Harp. Thomas, the younger of the two brothers, bought a car would teach as far away as Texas. George Pullen Jackson, a Vanderbilt University professor researching Southern traditional music, introduced the brothers to John and Alan Lomax. You may know the name Alan Lomax from his folk and blues music recordings, but he got his start helping his father, John Lomax. Both would record Sacred Harp music, most notably at the 1942 Alabama Sacred Harp Music Convention in Birmingham, where John Lomax would record 168 songs and have 45 minutes of interviews with Tom Denson, son of Payne Denson. Alan Lomax would return to the 46th United Sacred Harp Musical Convention held in 1959 in Fife. He had a contract with Atlantic Records to record a series of albums of Southern music. Three songs recorded were included in the Sounds of the South series of records. In 1862, an entire album, 18 hymns, was released on the Prestige Folklore label. In 1933, the Denson brothers formed the Sacred Harp Publishing Company. They purchased the 1911 J.S. James Sacred Harp songbook rights and began revising it. It was a natural progression for the Denson family, with their uncle's contribution to the original white publication and their teaching from the book, it just made sense. Tom had also helped James revise the songbook in 1911, which brought the focus back to more traditional music. This revision, the original Sacred Harp Denson revision, was published in 1936. The brothers removed 176 of the less popular songs to make room for new songs and to reduce the size of the book, which had become cumbersome. Unfortunately, neither brother got to see it published. Tom died in 1935, and Seaborn died the following year. Tom's son Payne and daughter Ruth Denson Edwards saw the book to completion. Tom had died unexpectedly, and it was a shock to the community. His daughter had written in her Bible that Birmingham News reporters estimated a crowd of 15,000 people in attendance at Fairview Cemetery in Double Springs. Jasper's Daily Mountain Eagle estimated that 2,000 to 3,000 people were in attendance. Still, an impressive showing. Sacred Harp music has gone through lean times with dedicated teachers and singers keeping the tradition alive at churches across Alabama, the South, and other parts of the country. By the late 1970s, a suggestion was made to have a nationwide singing event to bring together singers from across the country to one location. In June 1980, the first National Sacred Harp Singing Convention was held at Samford University in Birmingham. The event allowed singers to come to the heart of Sacred Harp singing and learn from traditional singers. The event also brought together singers who followed different books and styles, such as those along the coast who sing from the Cooper book, and the African-American community that followed the seven-note style. The event was a big deal. There had been much animosity between the Denson and Cooper factions over the years. The event was such a success that it has been held every June and has never left Birmingham. Now, after leaving Samford, the convention has been held in host churches and venues, which is why it was held at Trinity on my wedding day. I've only scratched the surface of Sacred Harp history and Alabama's place in this episode. Now, if this story interests you, I encourage you to dig deeper. If you want to learn Sacred Harp music, I suggest you look up Camp Fasola in Anniston. It's a summer camp that provides an immersive experience for learning Sacred Harp shape note singing, history, and traditions. Attending camp would be much the same experience as you would have had if Tom Denson had come to your town. And if you want to get to what could be described as the epicenter of Sacred Harp in Alabama, I suggest you go to the northeast Alabama town of Henniger on Sand Mountain. Liberty Baptist Church holds a singing on the first Sunday in July and the Saturday before, called the Henniger Union Convention. Grammy Award winner T-Bone Burnett made his way to the church while looking for music for the soundtrack of the movie Cold Mountain. He recorded 40 songs and used three during pivotal parts of the film. Now, before you step into Sacred Harp singing, be warned. Tom Denson once said, "If you don't like it, you'd better stay away from it because it will get hold of you and you can't get away." Thanks for listening to this episode of the Alabama Short Stories Podcast. I'm happy to announce that Volume 2 of the Alabama Short Stories book is now available and features stories from Seasons 4 through 6. You can purchase it and Volume 1 online at Amazon.com and other online retailers. If you'd like to support your local bookstore, you can purchase it through bookshop.org, where your purchases will help financially support independent bookstores. You can find links in the show notes and on the website. See you next time at Alabama Short Stories.